Good afternoon and welcome to What Comes Next Live. It's with great pleasure, an unanticipated delay to starting live, that I welcome Scott Perry of Creative on Purpose. Scott and I were linked together by being involved through Chip Connolly with the Modern Elder Academy. And then about a year ago, Scott invites me onto his show, and I said, what's your show about? Well, come on for half an hour and we'll talk live online. What do I need to do to prepare? He says, nothing, just come and we'll talk. And I so enjoyed the process that I immediately kitted myself out with a webcam and a decent microphone and absolutely copied the idea. So, because I love it, and I thought, well, I'd turn it around the other way. So it's with thanks, acknowledgement, and pleasure that I welcome Scott Perry to the show. Welcome, Scott.
Tom, thank you so much for having me and for your patience while I was sorting out a loss of electricity that we have not yet determined how it happened. But I'm actually very flattered that you stole an idea that I used. I'm not sure it was mine, but just this idea of let's hop on a Zoom and have a conversation out loud and in public and see if we can't arrive at some insight and inspiration for others.
Cool. Well, there was the hint is in the title of What Comes Next, and it's so vague. It could be tomorrow. It could be will we have power to cook our lunch later on today in the East Coast, or for you, or it could be where's the world going, or it could be highly existential. It could be anything at all. And generally, for me, my theme is always around what I call open leadership, which is really just about people and behavior. So, and we're in very interesting times right now, and maybe they're changing, maybe they're loosening up. But really, it's just whatever you want to talk about. So what comes top of mind for you at the moment?
Well, I want to start with the name of your broadcast, because it's actually very close to the second part of my most recent handbook, Onward, which is a manual for helping people embrace uncertainty and navigate adversity while they're engaged in doing work that matters. And the process is, I'll tell everyone the punchline, then you won't have to buy the book. The punchline is that the process is based on the three disciplines of Stoic philosophy. So Stoic philosophy has nothing to do with lowercase s common English uses. It's actually a philosophy of life based on how to flourish and thrive while you are engaged with the world and others, and do so in a way that enhances your prospects and while you enhance the prosperity of others. And the three disciplines are, the way that I repurpose them is by helping people become mindful and present in the here and now so that they can make the best decisions possible and step into possibility with and for people they care about. And it's based on three questions. What's now? What's going on now without all the value judgments and strong emotional attachments? What's next, to the point of the name of your broadcast, which is, of all the things I could do, what's the thing that if I did it now would actually move me and my endeavor the furthest and the fastest with and for the people that I'm working with? And then what's next, what's it for, which is, what is it all for? It's actually has nothing to do with the results, because results and outcomes are always beyond our absolute control. What we can control is the quality of our thoughts, the quality of our intention and integrity of our actions. And if we pay attention to the effort and the process, that is reward enough, and we can have a flourishing, thriving existence just knowing that we're good people doing good work and that we're doing it in service of others.
Very cool. Very cool. So I'm just – I like the way you said it's not Stoic with a lowercase s, which particularly in Britain is Winston Churchill, stiff upper lip,
mm-hmm.
Hang on through hard times, or the unofficial motto of the Royal Artillery Regiment is just nil illegitimum carborundum, which is don't let the bastards grind you down. pardon me for the language, but that's the translation. But it's not that at all, is it? So I think I have certainly found value from studying certain of the Stoics over time. And there's a young man called Ryan Holiday who does quite a lot of work around this you'll be familiar with. And he's popularized Stoicism with a capital S quite effectively. And for anybody who likes to journal at the same time, I do recommend the Daily Stoic Journal. As gives you a weekly theme with the daily question. So if you're a nice way to immerse yourself in it every morning when you wake up. I did that for best part of a year in 2018. So it's quite cool.
Yeah. Ryan is a fantastic popularizer of, practical application of Stoic philosophy. Stoic philosophy is very pragmatic and practical. Just going right to the primary source documents, I think, you know, my lifelong connection has been through Marcus Aurelius. I've been reading his Meditations since I was in the seventh grade, which, for those that can see what I look like, you know, that was a very long time ago. And yeah, it's just full, you know, what Ryan has done in the journal and by peppering his books with quotes from Stoicism, from Stoic primary sources is, you know, there's just all these one-liners, these little powerful maxims that are just reminders mm-hmm. of how we can, you know, right ourselves in any given situation. And I really appreciate, you know, I think of lowercase s. I often quote the stiff upper lip idea because that is, I think, the most accessible common English usage. And it's so different as, you know, there was cynicism and skepticism and Stoicism and Epicureanism. All were happening, you know, during the Axial Age, during this period of Hellenistic philosophies of life, kind of coming of age. And almost none of those words, well, actually none of those words mm-hmm, mm-hmm. then means what it means now. So it's just, you know.
So just as a primer, you mentioned some of the one-liners. Which ones, one or two of your favorites?
I'll share two. My very all-time favorite Marcus Aurelius quotation is, "Love the humble art that you've learned and take rest in it." Hmm. The humble art is the art of living, the art of living well, the art of living a good life, which the Stoics had some very specific ideas around. The humility part is that you, the individual, is simultaneously the least significant thing in the universe because the cosmos is vast and large and you're just one little tiny speck roaming around on another tiny speck that's swirling around with a bunch of other tiny specks and so on and so forth. And at the same time, you are here and you have a responsibility to execute your function, which for the Stoics was to live a life in pursuit of virtue in accord with nature. And so the art of living and take rest in it to me is the practice of gratitude. Like it's the work that you get to do, the work of being a good human being and becoming a better human being in service to other people is enough. And if you can be grateful for what you already possess and practice the art of living well, then you will live a good life. My second favorite quote is, imagine that you are dead. You have lived your life. Now take what is left and live it properly. And one of the things that I'm kind of notorious for in Seth Godin's workshops, where I'm a head coach and at Creative on Purpose, where I have a large community, is this thing called a cemetery run. And I go there every day for a very specific reason, because the very first day that I was running from my new home in town to the cemetery and back, I came within an inch of getting hit by a car. And I decided that if I don't want to end up in the cemetery, I should drive to the cemetery and have my run there. Turns out it's a beautiful place, surround all sorts of trees and flowers, Blue Ridge Mountains all over, cows lowing in the fields, deers prancing across the grass. And then there's these tombstones. And it reminds me that my time on earth is finite, that if I'm going to make the biggest difference that I can, that I have to work at it every day. And that I am just, also a part of this vaster system of living things and non-living things, all of which, you know, matter kind of equally. And so that memento mori, the practice of remembering that you will die that I practice as part of my cemetery run just really helps me stay focused, live a little bit more boldly, and have the discipline to keep showing up and doing the work that I'm building at Creative on Purpose and through the work I get to do with Seth Godin's Akimbo workshops.
Hmm. Very, very cool. I think when I try to distill simplicity quite often, and so sometimes when I'll talk to people, I'll, well, what do you mean by stoicism? And I'll just say, look, I'll give you one example, is the two-word axiom, memento mori. All right? Mm-hmm. And remember, you'll die. And if you just say it to people straight out, they'll often say things like, oh, that seems so negative. And I went, actually, no, it's the most empowering and positive and fulfilling phrase in the world to me. Yeah, it goes to what you're talking about is that, similar to your cemetery run idea, I just, will often talk to people about their the shift in life when they start looking towards their tombstone legacy as opposed to commercial legacy. And, somebody I talk about often is, my coach and mentor for years was a guy called Ed Percival, and he died suddenly, 5 years ago. And he'd been coaching, first of all, sports coaching, and then business coaching, leadership coaching for well over 5 decades. Mm. And his vast, thing of knowledge was absolutely incredible. And he distilled it all down to three words, be more you, which I think is Ed's version of what the Roman and Greek Stoics would have said 2,000 years ago. And his memorial service, the Brits don't do funerals the same way that I was used to. Christian funerals in Britain are not like Christian funerals in the Caribbean, where I lived most of my adult life, where it's both much expression of sadness and grief, emotion, crying, wailing, but then converted normally in a massive energy shift by the pastor in a church into a huge celebration. In Britain, they're often a memorial service on a cold winter midweek morning at 10:30, followed by tea and sandwiches in a horrible hotel meeting room, and people saying, I really must go back to work, because they don't really face emotions, and it's the way it's conditioned. And it's just, except when it was done for Ed, it was a cold summer, but a cold summer maybe just seemed cold because it was a funeral, midweek morning. But then we all went back to a hotel function room, and yes, there were tea and sandwiches, but there was also 300 plus people. Mm. And, an MC, there were a few organized, comments people made. There was a couple bits of music from his bass guitar coach. I know you're a musician. And then the mic was just passed, in something we used to say in our coaching business, just called I Feel Like Saying.
Mm.
And you just pick up the mic, you say, I feel like saying, and you just let the spirit move you.
Mm.
One I particularly remember was there was a guy, he must have been about 50. And Ed was very involved in British basketball. He was the chairman of the British basketball. And he'd been involved with basketball all his life. And this guy said, I've not spoken to Ed for at least 2 decades. But a few weeks ago, my team won the British championship. And I thought of him as the final whistle went. So that was a gentleman who has left a massive tombstone legacy. And when I woke up in the morning, and the time zone's far distant, and checked my email and saw the news that they died about a week before that, we were both huge Star Wars fans, and everybody knew him, called him Yoda. And if for those who know Star Wars, I suddenly realized he wasn't Yoda, he was Obi-Wan, because when he was struck down, he grew stronger. And he's with us to this day. So that's my sort of memento mori for me is, linked to all those stories. So that's a bit about stoicism, right? So some cool quotes. And your work is, your tribe is called Creative on Purpose, right? What's drawn you into publishing a book? The book was called Onward, you said, right? So what's drawn you into what had you feel there was a drive for you to write that? Because I'm also intrigued because I'm I keep thinking about writing a book, but I keep realizing I don't have a powerful enough driver to take me through the process.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm gonna answer that question. I just want to stick a pin in one thing that you said, because legacy is at the heart of everything that we do at Creative on Purpose. We say, one of the things we frequently say is live your legacy. Creative on Purpose is content, coaching, and community that's a compass for advancing difference makers, helping them live their legacy. That's our tagline. That's what the work is really based on. So I love the story that you just shared. And, you know, I think legacy is what people will remember when you're gone. And, you know, and you have the way that you, you know, the way that you live your legacy while you have the ability to live is what people will remember you for. Don't die with the difference only you can make inside you. The book. So onward, I've lost track. I think I have 6 or 7 handbooks now. And to your point about like thinking about writing a book and getting a little like caught up in like, ooh, that's a big thing. It can be a very little thing. I'll just go ahead and tell a story on myself. My first book was 3 pages long. You can publish something on the Kindle that's 3 pages long, and 3 pages, if you are measuring value by word count, it's not worth a dollar that I charge. If you measure it by the impact that it can have, if you practice the thing that it teaches, it's worth far, far more. And so for me, that was the thing that helped me push through the resistance of, you know, like becoming a, I never really had an aspiration for writing a book. In my adult life, when I was a kid, I wrote books all the time. I used to write books and staple them together and hand them to my parents and to my friends. And, you know, so I think all of us at some point take this natural storytelling posture that we have. Human beings have always made themselves, the world, and each other through narrative, through storytelling. As you referenced, I was a musician, a performing musician for over 30 years, a guitar teacher and studio owner for over 20 years. I thought that was the teaching in particular, I thought was going to be the thing that I thought that was going to be my legacy. I completed Seth Godin's Alt MBA, the 6th session, they're in the 30s or something now, back in August of 2016. I went into that wanting to build my current successful brick and mortar guitar studio endeavor into an online enterprise. I exited the Alt MBA not even wanting to be a musician or a guitar teacher anymore. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to do something different. It was going to leverage my lifelong appreciation, fascination, and study of Stoic philosophy and my lifelong pursuit of creative endeavor. And so to make sense of what the hell I was going to do, I just started writing. And I started with a blog. And when I had enough blog posts to justify putting them into a book, I wrote a book called The Stoic Creative. As you can imagine, not a lot of Stoics are interested in creativity. A lot of creatives are interested in Stoicism. So that tells you how successful that particular endeavor was. But then I moved on. I wrote my first really successful handbook bestseller on Amazon was called Endeavor, which was just this process for how to dial in the difference only you can make, a very simple 3-step process. And Onward is kind of the next step in beyond Endeavor, which is now that you know what the difference only you can make is, how can you start to develop a posture and approach to doing that work every single day and start making the difference only you can make. And there's a third piece percolating in my head right now that I'm not quite ready to announce, but that'll be coming soon. Writing is just, you know, and I know you write, I know you have a blog. It's such a, you know, I don't know what your experience is, but for me, it's just such a powerful tool for clarifying my ideas and for connecting with the right people and for getting the right, you know, feedback from the right people so that I can do even better writing the next time. And so whether you write a book or not, I encourage everybody to adopt some sort of writing discipline because it's such a powerful clarifier for just building identity, forging meaning in whatever enterprise that you're building, whether it's your job, your occupation, your vocation, or just a side hustle or passion project.
I so agree, and I'll say the same thing in a slightly different slant. I decided to start writing every day, and I began it on October 1st, 2017. I was going through quite a difficult time in life, and I've been following Seth Godin for years, and as you and I and many others know, he's had a practice of daily posting for well over 2 decades. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, wrote a post in September 2017 saying, this is post number, and it was X number plus 10,000 or whatever. And I just went, and I was going through this difficult time, and I just went, okay, I need some structure and solidity in what I'm doing, because everything felt a bit, a lot of change and a lot of uncertainty. So I thought, this will help. Mm-hmm. And whatever it might be, but a consistent practice, like another Modern Elder Academy alum is my dear friend Rosie von Lila from New York, who's been a past show guest. And she's doing some amazing work right now at vonlila.com, and she's taking tribes through various group events. And one of the things she does is this idea of miracle mornings, where it's like you've got your own structure, but it's a daily practice. And off the back of this, she's seen herself make major changes. So for me, the first 30, 60 days, people go, how do you do it? Well, you have to form a habit. And after 100 days, they said, okay, so how do you find something to write about every day? And I say, I just write. And sometimes it's a bit like Hemingway, and you say, you just sit at the typewriter and bleed, right? But well over, after about several hundred, I realized that, of course, all the themes keep repeating, right? From different prisms, different lenses, different case studies, different examples. And then I started to develop some models. So I started to clarify them into some models. So I've got them highlighted with visual graphics and stuff on parts of the site. And I don't highlight them on the site. They're in different places, like on my LinkedIn profile and in the footer of the website. But they just evolve. And then about well over 1,000 in, I'm about 1,300 in now, a French guy that I'd met on Twitter, and I find Twitter an amazing place for connecting with people, and they engage and they talk. And I much prefer it to LinkedIn, which I find a bit transactional. But one of them is this guy called Remy Guillot, and he, you know, messaged me and said, I see you write every day. I'm thinking about starting a weekly blog. I went, cool, go for it, right? Just really about the level of our DMs. And then he starts writing one every weekend, and he wrote an amazing one a while ago, which I curated onto my site. And he came up with like 8 or 9 different reasons why people write. And I read through it one weekend, and I suddenly stopped in my tracks and went, because I was never able to articulate what writing was about for me. Mm-hmm. And then I simply realized that what he said on one of these reasons was exactly it for me, which is, I write to develop my thoughts. Mm-hmm. I sometimes will have some notes written down. Sometimes I'll have a thought bubbling in my head. I may have discussed the same idea with 5 different people in 2 weeks. And inevitably I'll sit down and start writing. And then what I write is developed from my initial thought. Mm-hmm. It's not the same. So I'm fundamentally saying something similar to what you said, just in a slightly different way, which is having a daily practice to express yourself, which for many of us will be writing. You know, for jazz musicians, it could be just simply riffing on a theme every single day, and then suddenly something happens. And in working as a coach, a lot of the time people will just, I'll just sit there and ask them a couple of questions and listen. And they'll say, so what do you think? And I might just turn around sometimes. Occasionally I'll turn around depending on what feels right. And I might say, you've just expressed yourself for 15 minutes. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And they go, oh. And I've got one particular client who constantly will say on video calls, oh, stop, light bulb moment. And he will just give himself light bulb moments again and again by articulating first and developing his thoughts. So, you express things in a, really eloquent way. So it's very cool. And I'm happy that this conversation we're having with all of the yellow ones that have been gone before, so you're now a show alumnus, will sit out there in the ether in the podcast universe and can be watched on videos so they can see smiling faces. Your background's cooler than mine. The Occam's razor on mine is I moved house. That's why the bookcase, the obligatory Zoom background is blank.
So it's a blank slate. You can make it whatever you want.
I'm in the process of having it redecorated right now. So in a few weeks' time, the books will go on there and all the other stuff and better lighting and all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, cool. And all of a sudden, I'm conscious we'll stick to our time. And we've been going for about 28 minutes now of our half hour. So what I do like to do is allow or hand the baton to my guest to take the last couple of minutes and have the last word. So with that, I'll say thank you very much for being on and take us away.
Yeah, well, I appreciated everything that you just were sharing around the idea of a daily practice, because one of the programs I'm a head coach in is the Creatives Workshop, and it's all about developing a practice by showing up for 100 days in a row and simply writing. And my closing piece of advice is, you know, if you want to start a daily practice, whether that's a writing practice or an exercise practice or a meditation practice or whatever it is, you know, the hardest part about sitting down to do your work, to sitting down and getting started with your practice, the hardest part is sitting down. And so, you know, we come up with these convoluted, like, oh, I need to write for 2 hours a day. And then, of course, your inner narrator says, oh, but today's really busy and my wife yelled at me and I don't feel like it today. And you just can talk yourself out of it. But if you promise yourself to sit down and do your work for a minute, you will put your butt in a chair and do your work for a minute. And the likelihood that you'll continue to do your work and to do your practice for additional minutes is very, very high. And if you set your intentions too big, you're just setting yourself up to talk yourself out of them. Because if you think you need 2 hours to be an effective writer, you'll talk yourself out of the fact that you have 2 hours to write that day. Sit down for a minute and do your work, and you will continue to do your work, and you will get somewhere. 10 minutes is better than 1 minute. 20 minutes is better than 10 minutes. But no minutes is not any good to anybody, especially yourself.
Concise and simple wisdom. Thank you very much from the modern Stoic, Scott Perry. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you so much for your patience and for having me on today.
Okay. Cheers. Bye.